Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, and coming up on 10 into hour three. Johnny D. Got to spend some time with Johnny and Will, Will's son Drew. Seen more of, actually, I've seen, now that I'm thinking about it, I've seen the more of the three of you this summer than Tina.
That's not my fault.
It was fun. What a, I didn't see us yesterday. I had TV, and then I had, you know, we had the family in, so I had to take care of that and get some to the train station and stuff. So I didn't see get a chance to see you off yesterday.
Yeah, no, we were at the races playing the races, and we had a good time. It was a good 4 days up there, Saratoga. Recharged the batteries, played some golf, handicapped some races, enjoyed Travers Day. The unfortunate rain that did hit the area was kind of in between the golf Friday morning, and then it poured. And then we went to the track in the afternoon. Of course, it affected the races were taken off the turf. But, you know, all in all, the weather was great. And it was a fabulous trip. Fabulous trip. A good time with good friends. And that really, for me, going to Saratoga each year, besides the fact that Will and I and Will's son Drew have made this trip for the last 20 years or whatever it's been, 23, whatever it's been, you know, we enjoy it. But then also I get to touch base with so many people in the racing game, and also people that I've met through racing. It's just, it's a great time to, you know, say hello to people that you don't see the rest of the year. Maybe you see them.
Right.
Once or twice a year at major racing events, but it's great to touch base with people. And for me, in fact, I was in the paddock talking to a guy who is from my area. He lives close by, and I've played golf with him before, and is a friend. And I was in the middle of a conversation with him, and I looked, and I thought I saw someone walking by that I knew. I wasn't going to catch him. I said, excuse me. I said, I got to run. I went running after this person, and it was Chris McCarron. So I got to see Chris, who, of course, I've known for so many years out in California, and got to visit with him for an extended period of time. And so that was fun, just catching up. And you know, now we're talking about grandchildren and aches and pains and those kinds of things instead of who you're going to ride next, you know.
You know what's too bad? I'm just realizing, Johnny, I missed one opportunity. And when you mentioned McCarron, I should have introduced you to Rasai Harper, who's doing the Real Players of the Backstretch videos that I'm sure you've watched on Twitter.
I met him because I was standing there with Chris, and someone passed by that Chris knew. Chris said hello to him, and the guy moved on, and then he came back with the fellow you're talking about, and he shot a piece with Chris right there as we were standing there. It was a great interview. It was great standing there listening to him, to Chris talking about his career, some of the greatest trainers he rode for, which, by the way, he mentioned Charlie Whittingham as the best. And talking about various points in his career, and Chris mentioned one of his few regrets in his riding career was never having ridden a season at Saratoga. He's ridden, obviously, he's been there before and won races there, but he's never rode there a whole season, a whole meeting. And he said that was one of his regrets. He would have liked to do it, but of course, it conflicted with Del Mar, and Chris always had good Del Mar meetings. You know, he was always very successful there. And at that time of the year, I don't know if it's still the case as much, but you had jockeys doing a lot of traveling, maybe from California, traveling to New York, to Saratoga, also to Arlington. You know, there were places that they would go in the summer, a lot of traveling. So, you know, riding a full meet in one place. And I think that was the case this year. I don't think the jockeys moved very much this year. Obviously, you didn't have Arlington to go to. I think for the most part, they stayed home. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, though.
Hey, other than the new faces in California, I guess that's fair.
No, I meant the guys riding at Saratoga. For the meet.
Oh, yeah, for the most part. Well, I guess, Pratt had already made the move. I thought you meant like in general, like,
nationwide. No, I meant for a specific race, like for a, you know, look, Arlington Million Day, you'd look at the form and you'd have several New York riders, you'd have a couple California, you know, it was a mixture.
Right.
But I don't
think there
was much, there wasn't much this year the guys went out of town for.
The funniest out of town move, considering the great meet he's having, and I'm not sure, you know, how this came about, but how about Javier Castellano going to Monmouth on Saturday and to win the sorority?
Yeah, and you know, you really, if you're a Castellano
or the sapling.
If you're a Castellano fan, you've got to be so happy for Javier, and what a great meeting he had. What did he win yesterday? He won two or three. I think he won three yesterday.
Yep. But he won that maiden race for, right? He won the maiden race for Cherie.
Yep. Oh, that one looked good, too. Yeah. It looked like a pretty loaded race, too. It didn't look like it was. And breaking from the rail, very nice. But you have to be happy for him, this kind of, I don't want to say rebirth, but resurge, I'll say, that he's had. It's good to see.
Well, it just speaks to, you know, and this comes up with between Mig and Tony, it comes up regularly. And in fact, it actually came up with Mig today, talking about Johnny V and about the health factor. And by the way, thanks to a couple of different people, Ron Moquette and Leslie Knopf, both prompted me with Up an Octave was the horse at Keeneland that after the wire that fell on Johnny and might have completely ended his career. And then actually Ron had mentioned the Secret Compass was the Breeders' Cup horse that when Johnny hit the stanchion on the rail, and that's actually one of the injuries and one of the incidents that has prompted safety changes to the move to the safety rail, the breakaway safety rails, as opposed to the hard.
They were exactly.
Very
dangerous. You go all the way back to an incident in the gate in California before my time, a little bit before my time, when a horse named Austin Mittler flipped in the gate. And Alvaro Pinedo hit his head on one of the stanchions in the gate and was killed. And that was obviously a tragedy. And that now that those gates are padded so well, you know, we see horses go up a lot of times. And guys are okay, and the starter's in there with the horses and everything. But that led to, it takes an incident to lead to changes, which, you know, that's true in everything. Seatbelts, you know, it takes a lot of people dying before we figure out, hey, if we do this, it'll help.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
The other thing about the older riders that's interesting is it reminds you how, I was going to say, training and jockeys taking care of themselves health-wise. Earlier, I think Mig mentioned Gary Bailey having a, you know, avoiding serious injury, having a long career. You know, you look at a guy like Mike Smith right now, Johnny V, talked about him, Javier still going, these, you know, older guys. Now, Shoemaker is one of the older guys that hung around for quite a while. Partly he had Whittingham to ride for, which helped. But, you know, he still had it. She still had it at an advantage. And it gets to the point where now you're seeing more and more riders who are riding into their late 40s, 50s, early 50s, whatever, mid-50s. It's a bigger group of guys that are going to be able to do that because we're living longer. People are in better shape. I told you, I don't think we talked about it on the air. Stop me if we did. But in Godfather 2, Hyman Roth was having a birthday party out on the veranda, and they were bringing out his birthday cake. And someone blew up, stop framed and blew up the birthday cake to look for the age on the birthday cake. Now, if you remember Hyman Roth, and you kind of ask people, take a guess. I know you know the answer to it because I know I told you the story. Take a guess at how old Hyman Roth was in Godfather 2 in that scene. And you get 74, you get 78, you get 85, 86, all these years. He was 67 on the birthday. So it gives you some idea of how we've, you know, that was in the 1950s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's dying of the same heart attack for 40 years.
Yeah, right. And the same thing is true of Aunt B, that Aunt B on the Mayberry RFD show.
Andy Griffith.
Andy Griffith's show was 67. And you know, you say, well, how old was Aunt B? Oh, she's got to be in her 70s, right? Oh, she's 67. So we're all doing a little better now. And I think that's reflected in the jockey colony, in that they're age-wise, you know, they're able to continue. And physically, fitness-wise and training-wise, athletes are lasting longer. And I think jockeys have followed suit. And the guys that train hard, take care of their bodies. And in fact, this weekend I got to say hello. You know, obviously I saw my good friend Ron Anderson, but I got to say hello to Joel Rosario, and I shook his hand. And I mean, you know, for a little guy, he shakes your hand, and I felt like, whoa, like a vice grip, you know? You sometimes forget what outstanding athletes these guys are. Not just that they have a connection with the horse, which they do, but there's magic there, you know, with some of them, what they can do with their hands and their legs, and that's magic. But also that many of them are outstanding athletes in other sports. For example, like if you go back to like Shoemaker, tremendous golfer, tennis player. I don't know about basketball so much. Maybe that's the one sport where they're at a disadvantage. Although some of them,
I don't know.
When they have these games, you see some. And we're talking with Joel Rosario, who apparently was a pretty good ball player, baseball player. Well, he's from the Dominican Republic, which I think on your birth certificate it says you are a great baseball player if you're from the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, well, then you think about the basketball side. I mean, who was a better point guard in recent memory in those games? Those jock games than DeSormo. I mean, KD is a deadly outside shooter and a terrific ball handler.
Yeah, I try and stay away from watching those games. I see a bunch of adults beat up on little kids. You know, it's not fair. No, I'm just kidding. That game has been... I would imagine that game is probably maybe approaching 35 years that they've been playing that game. The Santa Anita Jockeys against the, I think it's Holy Name is the
Holy Angels.
Holy Angels. Okay, there it is. Yeah, right there in Arcadia. Yeah, that is a tradition like the Rose Bowl.
Exactly, and we've got him here too, but we don't necessarily have as strong of although when DeSormo was New York based a couple of summers, but he'd put up 35 in every one of those games.
Yeah, you know, you can go down the list. You know, I played a lot of golf with Chris McCarron, Corey Nakatani, excellent golfer, Sandy Hawley. Tennis, golf, it didn't matter what you play with. The other thing that comes out when you are around jockeys a lot is the competitiveness. You know, when you're doing other things, obviously I was never riding against them, but when you're golfing or tennis or air hockey or pinball, I don't care what it was, whenever you're around these guys and you're starting to do something else, like cards, playing, you know, racetrack rummy or whatever Shoemaker was playing. God, those guys are so competitive in no matter what they do. Probably a factor of being a professional athlete, I would think, that's part of what you have to have, that will to win that drives you, you know. And it's not just in your sport, but it's in everything to be a professional athlete. But it really comes out, you know, when you're away from the track with them in any kind of endeavor.
You know, you made me think of some other, another one of those age-related story that you referenced. How about Lawrence Harvey being only 3 years younger than Angela Lansbury in The Manchurian Candidate, with Angela Lansbury playing his mother?
These are the things that boggle the mind. And how does Angela Lansbury feel? Like, all right, I got this great gig. I'm going to be in a movie, and I'm playing a mother. Really? Who's playing this best? And then you tell him. You say, wait a minute, isn't he just 3 years younger than you?
Well, Angela Lansbury's looked the same. She basically looked the same for 60
yeah.
years. It's sort of a strange phenomena. Well, listen, you've looked the same for 30 years.
Yeah, people say that, and you know what? People lie. The guy I'm looking at in the mirror is not the guy I was looking at 30 years ago.
Johnny, let me use you as the, and I'm sure we'll follow it up a little bit with Andy tomorrow too, but let's use your and Will's and Drew's experience, from the betting side. Let's look at these races. Went through them with Mig from a tactical side. Your thoughts about the gambling portion, particularly on Saturday, and then you can kind of weave in, you know, anything else. I know that Drew actually scored out on Friday of all days when things were chopped up to hell. He hit that pick five for a few dimes. But from a betting standpoint, what were your thoughts about Saturday?
Well, you know, I think we talked about it last week, like a pre-Travers rundown before the races, before we knew the particulars of the races. But we talked about how I said, well, these big days are often very chalky, but a favorite will fall. You know, some horse that looks like you can't lose will get beat, because that's Saratoga. That's what happens there. And I think that the feat of Jackie Voyer was that race, you know, where you thought, oh, this one looks pretty solid on all points. But I would say that the horse that won the race, again, if you were willing to say, look, 7/8 might not be Jackie Warrior's best distance, who comes into the race with credentials, you're looking for someone else, you could have landed on the winner. I don't think that was very far-fetched at all. So from that perspective, and I was standing with some people who actually bet on the winner, and I could see it. It wasn't like, but if you have to have that doubt on the favorite. Why do you doubt the favorite? What's your reasoning? And if you can come up with something at 3-5, 2-5, whatever, you know, it's always worth. Now, you take another race like the Clairier, the personal entry, you look at that race, I don't think you can foresee what happened to her. In other words, here's a favorite. It's a field where I did think, certainly from a gambling perspective, if it wasn't much to be made, I don't think, horizontally in there, but if you're looking on a vertical idea, multi-race idea, I thought, look, this is my opinion, I thought that there were a couple that could win that race. I didn't think she was, she stubbed her toe. What's that?
No doubt. I mean, there were, other than Crazy Beautiful, any of the four principals seemed eligible. I mean, I tried to lean heavily on Search Results, and it's not like she, you know, didn't run well, but, I used Malathat as a C, and the other three, Latruska on the wire possibility, Search Results as the logical horse to kind of overhaul her, and Clairier because, she's been in great form. Malathat to me was a little bit less likely, and, here you are. I mean, you have, You know, the people rail about these, it's a five-horse field, how can I bet? Well, how could you have bet, Cody's Wish? And how did you bet, everybody was grousing that they didn't have Gufo. So, we get this every weekend.
But when there's a five-horse field and they're well-balanced, I found that race, like, there was no way I was going to play an exacta or play a horse to win. That was the kind of race where I didn't feel like I had any real opinion. I didn't see any edge. There were no prices to be had in my opinion, my handicapping. So I said, well, what do I do with this race? I think it was in the... And I think it started at pick five. It was second leg of pick six. You got pick threes running through there. And I did like the horse in the 10th race. The personal anthem was the 9th race. And I did like a horse in the 10th race. It was a good price. Mirror's Mission, who you've mentioned already. So, it kind of fell in an area where I needed to do something with the race. But it was a... In other words, I didn't have an opinion in the race, but I needed to maybe do something with it. And those are tough races for me when you end up using, or you feel like, in a five-horse field that three of them can win. Man, and one of them is going to be 4-5 or 3-5 or whatever. Then you've got a spread, and you're not even spread into a 15-1 shot. You're spreading over just to advance. So those are aggravating races for me, because to spread like that, to have to advance, is now that maybe that's when you take a stand and say, look, there are three options in here, but they're not good prices. I've got to make a stand here, because this is not where I'm going to win this wager. I'm just going to advance, and I don't want to, spend a three spot or a four spot to advance. I want to save those bullets for when I might need them. The other option is, since I did like the horse in the 10th race quite a bit, and it was going to be a huge price, which he ended up 18-1, the other option would have been to say, okay, I don't know about this race. I think there are three or four in here that can win it, and in my multi-leg wagers, I'm going to single my opinion in the next race at 18-1, but I'm going to stay alive in here. And if my opinion is correct at 20-1, I single that, or at 18-1, I single that horse, I've got I'm alive, I got a strong ticket, because I've only used a single to get there. To get to my, and I'm following my opinion. But my opinion in the personal engine was, I don't know. That's what I felt. I don't know. And sometimes it's the right answer is I don't know. And we're not conditioned to say that. We're conditioned to say, who do you like? I like the six. I like the four. I like the. Sometimes you can say, I don't know. I don't like anybody, That's an important thing to understand and to then build your ticket around the fact that I don't have a handle on this race. So anyway, then we get to the 10th race, and you've already talked about it quite a bit. Gufo over Mira Mission with Soldier Rising in third. I didn't give Gufo the respect that he deserved from a wagering standpoint. I really thought that Mira's Mission was going to fire. And at 18-1, everything I did was around Mira's Mission, straight bet, multi-race, everything. The kitchen sink. I mean, if this one wins, it's going to make my four-day trip at Saratoga plus. It's going to be... You look for these kinds of horses. It's funny because in the hotel room Saturday morning, I was going through the sword dancer with Drew, Will's son, and I was explaining to him why I like this horse. I said, I found one that I really like. And I was giving him all the reasons how the thoroughbred numbers were so tremendous. The development was there. The breeze on August 14th on the turf, a nice minute breeze. The 100 buyers that were kind of sneaky. The prep race that this one had already had. Improving four-year-old. There's so many things. And I was telling Drew that this horse is 12-1 on the line. I like this horse. And so Will was getting a shower, and then he came. And I said, Will, who do you like in the Sword Dancer? And he sits down, he opens up his sport. He said, Mirror's Mission. And then you come on this morning and say, everybody likes Mirror's Mission.
We all did. Sean Clancy as well. And John, here's an interesting proposition to consider. Now you look at that race, and where did I turn there? Where is it? Here we go. It was a 10-horse field, and you know I put Broom on top. I thought Rock Emperor, who I've generally had a good feel for in his quixotic career. And Tribhuvan scared me a little bit too, because around here we just watch horses parade around the oval. I don't care if it's three turns or not. And I left Gufo off in favor of Mirror Mission because he felt like the right price, and I had him kind of at the bottom just because I'm a little concerned about being used early to find position. So you end up in a situation where, I mean, at least for my pecking order, the way I approached the race, that Gufo got kind of excluded because I was going to get decent prices on Rock Emperor and Tribhuvan, and there's certainly been enough decent price Chad Brown opportunities this meet. And the horse and Broom I had to use, but the horse that got excluded was Gufo, and to then get beat by him, you're like doubly cursed in the decision making process. But you had the right horse, when it came to Mirror Mission to include, but you never got to the winner.
Yeah, and the way I bumped into, which turned out to be, I think Nig was talking to me and said he had the exacta, and I had a decent exacta.
Nagler?
And the way I bought
Nagler?
What's that?
Nagler?
What's that?
Did you say you're talking to Nagler or to who? Who had the exacta?
I did.
Oh, okay.
I did. I did.
But you brought up Nagler.
And the way I bumped into it was, you thought I said I bumped into Nagler? Is that what you thought I said?
Yes. Yes.
No, I bumped into the exacta. And the way I bumped into it was, I had everything tied up with Mirror Mission. I think I had pick five, pick four, pick three, win bet. I said, okay, I've got him covered on the win end. If he wins, I'm a happy camper. And then I thought for a second, if he runs second, you know what I've done? I've picked an 18-1 shot, and I'm right. I'm pretty right about him. He ran his race,
mm-hmm.
And I'm going to sit here with nothing. So I said, let me put him on the bottom of the contenders. And so I flipped through the four. I looked above. If he can win, he can win, he can win. And I put him with, I think, four horses on the bottom, three or four. And, as it turned out, he got second. Now, your point about Gufo, you're not the only one who overlooked him, because 9-2 odds, you look at his odds. He's been 240-1, 225-1 favored, 245-1 favored, 130-1 favored, 185-1 favored, 255-1 favored, 90 cents, 4-1, favored, 150-1. He was 8-1 in the Breeders' Cup turf. All right? And he's 9-2 in this race as defending champion. Everyone overlooked him. They just, now, you could say, and these are some of the things that I thought about, he had lost to other horses in this race recently, and more than one. So that generally sours the public. When they look down, they see, well, he just lost to a couple of horses that are in this race. He's 5 years old now, blinkers on, you know, maybe the trainer's reaching for something. So he drifted. He drifted.
Travers, Johnny, let's get that in, and then I got to get Kelly Breen to visit.
Travers, look, if I'm going to remember this trip, I mean, I think first I'm going to remember Mirror's Mission, or second, instead of first. that's the first thing I'll remember. The second thing I'll remember is the development and the, you know, the powerful race that Epicenter ran. It's still, all I could do was complain, where was he in the Kentucky Derby? How did that happen? I still don't know how it happened. I mean, I know how it happened. The pace collapsed and everything. But here I, again, we had the right horse, and Will and I were talking about it. We, you know, he turns out to develop, and the great job of training Asmussen is done with this horse, to just bring him along step by step by step. If you look at his thoroughgraph sheet, his numbers are so consistent. He's never taken a back step through, what has he had now, nine or ten starts? Never taken a back step, not once. His races are spaced perfectly. He got him to the Kentucky Derby in perfect shape. He fired his race. He was defeated by a freak day, freak occurrence, but really a picture of development. And this is what Steve Asmussen does as a trainer. He develops him, he brings him along just so steadily, and pace is perfect. Pace. They don't fire a huge, eye-popping, scorching number and then disappear for 6 months. He brings him along step by step by step by. And he said as much, he explained as much on your show this morning. He talked about development and letting them go at their pace, but it's a skill. It's not just that. Other people just can't say, well, I'm going to copy him. It's a skill. He knows what to do. You know, he's a Hall of Fame trainer. He's won more races than they do. There's a reason, you know. So that's going to stick out in my mind. You talked about the effort of Cyberknife. Certainly, I thought he was not going to finish second when Epicenter... When Epicenter said goodbye to him, and he had done the some of the dirty work up front, but he held on for second, great game. And then you had Zandon and Rich Strike kind of closing. But then again, look, if you're Rich Strike or you're Zandon, you're supposed to go by Epicenter. I mean, Cyberknife.
Cyberknife.
I mean, that's the way I would feel if I was in their camp. I would say, hey, I'm supposed to go by him at that point. Going a mile and a quarter, I'm supposed to pass him. So, all right, you say, how good are the three-year-olds really if you put them all together? I don't know, not the greatest crop, but it's, you know, a hard-trying, solid, entertaining group. Yeah. Epicenter, he's the head of the class. He's shown up, and the only time he's not punched his way home, he's had some excuses. The Preakness, the biggest example, but he's developed into a really, really good horse. Let's see what Flightline, let's see what he turns up this weekend, and we'll talk about the Classic down the road. And it's funny, just before Mig said Epicenter would get a perfect trip in the Classic, I said the same thing to Will. I said, well, if you get Flightline and life is good together, he's going to be in the perfect spot. But that's down the road. That's what I'll take away from this, Travers, is the development and performance of Epicenter after the disappointment of Mirrors, whatever. Mirrors Mission.
Mirror Mission.
mirrors.
Now, Johnny, as always, appreciate the perspective, appreciate you guys coming up. We had a lot of fun hanging out, and we will turn our attention to Ben Salem. We're hard to believe, right? Exactly. We get
what
ready for
today.
Where's Roy? What does he got?
I'll let him tell you.
Peach
what
perfect
do we got? Well,
first. And Peach Perfect, I think, in the first or second. You like her a little bit. And got one main track only later on. I have not checked conditions yet. Burano, that's leader of the band's younger sister. She's in main track only.
Very nice. Peach Perfect is 3-1 with Frankie Pennington in the second race, 1:22, your post time. And I think weather-wise, we're okay weather-wise, right? There's no, there shouldn't be. Although Philadelphia, if somebody spits on that course, they take it off.
Yeah, we're hoping it comes off the turf.
Yeah. We also, I should mention, since this came up, we also have got one of those Catman horses. Silencing runs today that Wayne talked about on Friday. Silencing in the first at Indy today, the 7 in race 1, 2:30 post. Well, Johnny, is Drew with you, or did Drew come up separately?
No, we dropped Drew off at the Albany Airport. He's flying to D.C. Yep. He lives in the D.C. area. So.
Yeah, he's down in D.C., so he's got to continue on. All right, well, it was great. So much fun, actually. Saturday, sitting there with you guys an hour or more was really one of the highlights. We had, as usual, a bunch of laughs, and we will pull it together, although no Will at the right? Will's not coming to, can't come to Pennsylvania Derby.
No, he's got a bigger name in the other line. He's got a better offer.
He got a better offer. He's got a better sponsor. XB Johnny D, everybody, and Will is one of those people on Twitter who accepted the name that Twitter gave him, as opposed to, so it's Will 317279. It's I don't know if there's any way to fix that, Will, but it's. It's not readily rememberable. It, you could change it to Mainline Will, or I don't know. Come up with, I don't know what
that's
to do.
That's the number on his mugshot.
I love it. There we go. The boys heading back to the Illadelph. We're going to get one quick visit in. We got 10 minutes to close out the morning. I want Kelly Breen to come by, and we got a couple of winners specifically. We're going to get a little Andiamo a Firenze. We'll get that update. So, Casey, let's get Kelly in here. And I saw KJB on Friday. Yeah, Friday. He was going. He was heading off to saddle Andiamo. And, you know, obviously the off-the-turf races, as Chris Clement referenced earlier this morning, the off-the-turf, you know, botched things up pretty good on Friday. So everybody's going to regroup, those that scratched. And, you know, it's hard to know what to make, you know, the races that came off. You don't really, you know, you can't get overly excited, but you can. Andiamo is a little different. This one, you know, the races that stayed on the, you know, the races that were scheduled for dirt. Bill Parcells' filly came back and won very well. Maple Leaf Mel turned back a couple of probing attacks and kept on going. The cross traffic that was with Rosario with Jeremiah Maple Leaf Mel and. Also on the main track, the Albany, boss making boss moves for Shaz, Rick Shosberg, and the Clear Stars people, and IRAD. In the Fleet Indian, that David Donk, the David Donk filly, that Fingal's Cave, who I kind of leaned on pretty heavily. Fingal's Cave was terrific, the Carpe Diem. Winning the Fleet Indian, And then came Kelly Breen and Ron Lombardi. I saw Ron coming down into the winner's circle, gave him a big congratulations. And here's Kelly with us now. We got about 5-6 minutes. Kelly Breen, congratulations on Diamo a Firenze, takes the next step.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. Had a really good weekend.
It's funny. Coming out of the Sanford, and you gain the black type, graded black type, and then you take advantage of the New York bred side of things. This happens to be one of Ron's homebreds as well, so it does nice things for his dam. My Every Wish, the Langfuhr mare. Talk a little bit about where you think you are with Andiamo and what you do for the fall.
You know, I know he didn't run a bigger buyer or anything like that, so he did it the right way, but I don't know if buyers and all of that makes that much of a difference. He did run a nice race. He did win. Our things right now is to point towards the Champagne. You know, Ron won it with Firenze, and he wants to see if he can do it with his little brother. This guy here is, as a Spitestown, maybe might be more speed orientated, but he's a smart horse. So we're going to try and do my best to get him the rate and to see how far he'll go.
How is he similar or different from? Well, you didn't have Firenze as a 2-year-old, but do you notice
they
any?
They both have attitude. I can tell you that. They have
is
the
that
attitude.
Right?
If this horse was the If he was the savage of the horse going down through the stretch, I wouldn't put it by him. You know, he's a competitor.
I love it. I was really interested in him right from the get go at Belmont that day, and being Firenze's then as good a career as Firenze Fire had, so there was a lot of attention paid. And the other thing you didn't have to worry really about was the wet track, because he had broken his maiden on a sloppy seal track.
Correct. No, when it was raining out first thing in the morning, it was just a matter of, are we going to get one more rain, or is that it for the day? But he handles both tracks well. So that wasn't a problem.
Well, I should also note, before we talk about yesterday and winning the Hess, that Photon as well, earlier on the day. And this is a homebred of Rock Talk Farm, a filly. She's a 3-year-old, she's had a couple of placements, but her last two races, she's going to break her maiden soon enough.
Yeah, it would have been really nice to have two wins on a Friday before Travers at Saratoga. A win in the second's not bad. It's the second best of what I could do. But, yeah, she's a nice filly, well put together, straightforward. Maybe the inside post might have got her just a little bit, and the winner got away to an easy lead. But that's racing, and she came back good, and, we'll move on and go to hopefully get her maiden broken at Aqueduct, at Belmont at Aqueduct, whatever you're going to call it.
The Jersey bred day yesterday, a Monmouth. I won't go through all the results today. I'll do it tomorrow. But he's pure gold. That Vancouver 4-year-old is now suddenly 3-for-4 on the year.
Yeah, we had some issues with him. He recovered well from last year to this year. Early in the meet, when the meet wasn't nearly as fast, the track had been sped up about a week before Haskell. And when we were just legging this horse up, he was posting fast workouts on the dirt. And I always had it in the back of my mind that this horse might actually be able to run well and run in some nice races on the dirt. I don't want to say I don't want to call it butting heads, but I know if John Bauer was listening right now, he's like, he's a turf horse. He's a turf horse. He could be better on the turf. But I know that he can handle the dirt. So going into this race, we had he owned three horses to run in two different races. Didn't know exactly where to put picking time. So I ran him two in the sprint and one going long. And this horse, he just ran a great race. Came out of the gate with mind on business. Just a very professional, really nice horse to have in your barn kind of horse.
A couple of other nice horses. Kelly, let's get a couple of updates on a couple of stake horses. November Rain coming out of the test.
Yeah, you know, a little bit disappointed. We were shooting for the stars, hoping that we hit the board. You know, Ron's got the mare, same sort of thing as, you know, New York bred, being bred by Ron Lombardi, that I'm not sure if I get the name correctly, but Matt Garrity, I think, wrote the story and had Ron Lombardi as Ron Amore for, he got a big kick out of it. So now he's not only is he really Mr. Amore Stables, but now he's Ron Amore. So instead of Lombardi, he's changed his last name. But it goes to having a couple of nice brood mares for Ron, you know, helping with the New York bred program. It's a great program. We don't have anything penciled in just yet for her. She came out of the race in good order. You know, she'll have another breeze or two before we get ready to figure out what to do with her. But nice filly, talented. She's got some quirks about her around the barn, and the barn people that we have there really handled her well. You got to walk around with the white gloves on. You know, there's different horses where you have Andiamo Firenze, where you got to go in there like catching a tiger, and then you got to go in there and try and work with November Rain, and everything was with white gloves and petting her and being so gentle. I got to give it to our crew and our guys up in New York, you know, from Exercise Rider. We have a Hall of Fame jockey. I'm not sure if he's Hall of Fame, but the all-time leading rider at the Meadowlands, Nick Santagata, helps us out at Saratoga. You know, my assistant John Atfield and the ex-Bug rider was Derby Glass, was up there at Saratoga. So the whole crew, it takes a family to get everything to fruition, and it's working for us.
Kelly, John, Breen, everybody, follow KJB on Twitter. And Cal, I appreciate it. We will see you here over the next, you know, next little while, or maybe at Philly.
Yeah, I'll be up there Thursday, it looks like.
I'll see you Thursday.
See you soon. Okay.
Kelly Breen. There we go.
Take care.
And thanks, buddy. Ron Amore. He's no longer Ron Lombardi. From now on, when you see him, hey, Ron Amore. Thanks to Kelly and Johnny, Rich Migliori, and, of course, Christophe Clement and Steve Asmussen. If you missed anything, tomorrow, 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM on the replay a little bit later. We'll have the archive and the pod, etc. We're now on Spotify, too. Yeah. Somehow I figured that out one afternoon. I said, oh, why aren't we on Spotify? Well, now we are. Thanks, everybody. A lot of fun. Good luck if you're playing today. Plenty of good action, including at Indy. Catman in that first, and Will's horse in the second at Philly. Colonial getting ready as well. Talk to you tomorrow.
That's a dope killing all of these.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule, an average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.